Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the online course for the ACE CPT exam. We are here to get you started on Chapter 7, and specifically the PowerPoint for Chapter 7. So, Chapter 7 is where we get into a little bit of the fun associated with personal training, and that's really setting your client up to be ready for a fitness program. Or basically what I mean is that you're determining what elements are going to factor into their fitness program based on their functional assessments, which is the name of the chapter. So specifically, as we scroll over to slide number 2, we're really getting into different types of assessments. And the first one we're going to talk about is going to be the static postural assessment. So when we think about assessments, once again, just as a more of an intro, where all you are looking to do is take the person that's in front of you, determine where they're at in their health and in their fitness levels, and then adjust their fitness program based on those factors. Okay, so as far as the static postural assessment goes, we're mainly looking for posture. And when we think of static posture, we're referring to a non-moving posture in the sense someone would be standing and you would just look at their body parts and the alignment to determine what their posture is. So, to read that right there, the structural integrity refers to state or the state of musculoskeletal alignment. That's your structural integrity. And basically it's a balance that allows muscles, joints, and nerves to function efficiently. And as a side note and something that we do want you to know for the test is that type 1 muscle fibers hold static positions and posture with isometric contractions. Okay, so when we think of, you know, the muscle fiber types, type two is more for power-based movements. You know, your quadriceps are going to be very powerful. Those are going to have more higher concentrations of type 2 muscle fibers. But your postural muscles, the deeper core postural muscles, and really just postural muscles of the entire body, are going to consist of more type 1 muscle fibers, which have a lot more blood flow, a lot more energy, we'll say, due to that blood flow, and can hold longer term contractions. So look at the picture there on slide 2, you have a normal alignment, which is going to be ears over the shoulders. And this is from a lateral view. You have ears over the shoulders, then shoulders over the hips, hips over the knees, and knees over the ankles with a straight or neutral hip and spine posture. Neutral spine posture is a small S from this perspective. All right, when we get to our first imbalance, we're going to talk about, as we move over to slide 3, we're going to talk about a static postural assessment called, or incorrect static postural alignment, which is called kyphosis. So a nice, fun, sciencey sounding word there for you. All it really means is kyphosis is increase of a rounding of the back, and specifically the upper back. And kyphosis is really that sort of arch that you see in older people in which kind of their upper back is rounded. Okay, we do want you to know what kyphosis is, and more or less it's the increase in the rounding of the upper back, or increase in upper back flexion. And then you also have lordosis, which you're looking for in a static postural assessment from the lateral view like this. And lordosis is an excessive arch in the low back, or increased extension of the lumbar spine. So what muscles might be tight and what muscles might be shortened is tight. Tight muscles can be shortened. They might be called facilitated or hypertonic, meaning over tense. So shortened muscles for lordosis include shortened hip flexors, lumbar extensors like erector spinae, anterior chest and shoulder muscles, the latissimus dorsi, and the neck extensors. Those are what's going to be shortened and need to be stretched in a fitness program. And then lengthened, or the inhibited muscles, or the weak underactive muscles, are going to be things like the hip extensors, like the hamstrings, gluteus maximus. External obliques, maybe the upper back extensor. So that's kind of, you get into your longissimus, or basically still your erector spinae, but there's a intricate thoracic muscles there. Scapular stabilizers, rhomboids, lower trapezius, okay? And then your neck flexors. So those are the muscles that are going to be weak and need to be strengthened. Okay, so when we think about the easiest way, when I think of looking at someone with a kyphosis lordosis posture, which is kind of the combination of the two, which is your that right picture of the purple skeleton right there has an excessive arch in the low back and excessive rounding of the upper back. When I think of that sort of person, I'm focusing on stretching, or basically foam rolling and stretching the hip flexors, the latissimus dorsi, and the erector spinae, big time. Okay, then I'm focusing on strengthening the gluteus maximus, the hamstrings, the rectus abdominis, a little bit of a we'll say anterior core muscle strength to tilt that pelvis a little bit more neutral. And then also your rhomboids, lower trap muscles to really bring those shoulders backwards and prevent that rounding of the upper back. Okay, so that's the basics behind it. Obviously, as you get more into corrective exercise and understanding posture, you'll find what's best for each individual scenario. But that is a good start there. All right, so now moving over to slide number 4, specifically talking about flat back posture. This is flat back posture is basically a posterior pelvic tilt in which the pelvis is kind of drawn forward, and they're kind of like a flat. Well, the back is considered flat. The normal S of the spine is a little bit more rounded, we'll say, throughout the entire back, specifically, in my opinion, in the lower back. But flat back, what muscles are shortened? You have your rectus abdominis. So these are the muscles that I would stretch. Shortened muscles means they're tight, so you need to stretch them. Rectus abdominis I would stretch, okay? Maybe like a cobra or what do they call it in yoga? The baby cobra, big cobra, basically that seal pose, I think even it's called. Then you have your upper back extensors, okay? So those are shortened, basically stretching your erector spinae. There's some rotational stretches you can do there, but also the neck extensors, like sternocleidomastoid, scalenes, that sort of thing. And then ankle plantar flexors, which is your calves. I love how they talk about your ankle plantar flexors as opposed to just saying your calf muscles, or your gastrocnemius and soleus are the calf muscles. So all of those I would foam roll and stretch. Lengthened, what would I want to strengthen more or less? Or what muscles are weak? The iliacus or psoas major. So in this one, the hip flexors are a little bit weak. Okay, doesn't happen too much, as when most people sit, the psoas really gets, we'll say, very shortened. But then you have the internal oblique lumbar extensors, and neck flexors are also lengthened. And I would want to strengthen those muscles. Basically, doing some basic core work can help there. All right, so moving on to slide number 5, we're going to get into sway back, referring to the static postural assessment. And sway back is really all just a major, major hunch in that upper back. And it's almost like they're kind of leaning, their hips are kind of going forward, and their upper back is kind of going backwards, giving them this appearance of leaning, slightly leaning backwards in a way, and their pelvis is kind of jutting forward. But what muscles are going to be shortened and need to be foam rolled and stretched? These muscles are too tight, they're hypertonic. These are the hamstrings, upper fibers of the posterior obliques, lumbar extensors, and neck extensors. So stretch those muscles. And what muscles are weak and need to be strengthened? You have your hip flexors, or iliacus, psoas major, as well as your rectus femoris, that's your six-pack, external oblique, upper back extensors, and neck flexors as well. All right, so those are getting us through the static postural assessment. As we move over to slide 6, we're going to talk about one thing that I want you guys to know for the test, and it's really just the definition, or what is this? This is called scoliosis, okay? And scoliosis is basically going to be an increased lateral curvature of the spine, and that's when you're looking from a posterior or anterior view, and the spine makes an S shape to the lateral sides. This is very dangerous for loading the spine, as the discs in between the spine are not properly positioned to accept a lot of load. Okay. So always keep that in mind. If somebody does say they have scoliosis, even moderate scoliosis, you do need to be aware that spinal loading should probably be avoided, but talk to their doctor for a final decision on that. All right, so Yeah, once again, scoliosis, lateral curvature of the spine. Lateral curve of the spine, that's what you need to know for the test, for sure. All right, so as we move over to slide number 7, we have muscle imbalances. Okay, when we're just generally talking about these, and muscle imbalances are basically going to be attributed to two categories of factors. What are those factors? They're going to be correctable factors and non-correctable factors. So basically, hopefully you guys know what muscle imbalances are. These are basically when a muscle is too tight and it causes improper posture, or a muscle is too weak and can't do its job correctly, so there's improper posture, or a combination of both of those. Basically, if somebody has improper posture, it's typically due to muscle imbalances. Okay, tight muscles, weak muscles, and so on and so forth. So the correctable factors, which we want you to know for the test, are going to be specifically one that's most important is repetitive movements. They want you to know that muscle imbalances are created by repetitive movements. And this could be, you know, anything from sitting down all day long in my case, I surf a lot. Surfers and swimmers get this in the sense that reaching forward to do a stroke, you overactivate a lot of the pec major and anterior deltoid muscles, and as well as latissimus dorsi. That creates a rounding of the shoulders appearance. That is a muscle imbalance that I constantly have to fight off, and by strengthening my upper middle back and external rotators of my shoulder. Correctable factors, the main one I want you to know is repetitive movements, as that's what are going to cause most muscle imbalances in all of your clients, okay? Other correctable factors include things like a side dominance, like always swinging right-handed in golf, or always swinging with your right hand with a tennis racket. You'll notice that especially if you watch in, you know, the French Open, Wimbledon, Australian Open, US Open of tennis, look at the athlete's dominant hand and look how jacked their, excuse me, when I say jacked, I mean extremely muscularly toned, their working dominant arm is compared to their other arm. It's crazy how strong it is, because they mainly use one hand in tennis, but yeah, just check that out. That's pretty fun fact, and pretty cool to look at, especially with the difference between the two arms is crazy. Poor posture is a correctable factor that causes a muscle imbalance. Also, imbalanced workout programs. This is very common for youth, or we'll say college-aged males and late high school-aged males, to really focus on certain lifts like bench press. And they overwork the pectoral muscles, which causes a rounding of the upper shoulders and tightness in the shoulder, which can cause pain, definitely. That's the most common one that I typically see is males that hit the gym too much without proper balance in their programs, and they end up with rounded shoulders and lack of shoulder flexibility. And then also a lack of joint stability or mobility can be a correctable factor regarding muscle imbalances. Non-correctable factors, this is stuff that can't be corrected in a sense that they have a muscle imbalances, but you're just going to have to live with it, because as a personal trainer, you can't do anything to assist with it. That's going to be congenital conditions or musculoskeletal conditions like scoliosis, pathologies, some diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, RA, structural deviations, when they were growing, their bones did not form correctly. And then definitely traumas, surgeries, amputations. You can't assist someone in correcting a muscle imbalance if they are missing a limb that's causing the other side to be more active. Or surgeries that have caused or that have rendered a certain body part very or lacking in function, for sure. All right, so moving over to slide 8, we're going to get into some fun stuff. What are you looking for when you're looking for, or when you do certain assessments? Okay, we're looking for postural deviations. We kind of went over the static postural ones, which were the sway back and basically kyphosis, lordosis, posture, and those sort of things. But now we're getting into very specific postural deviations, especially during a squat. You'll see the picture here has a lady squatting with her feet really pronating inward. Okay, it's also known as eversion, and that's when the foot collapses inward. Notice how she doesn't have an arch in her foot there. The foot just kind of collapsed inward. We do want you to know that for the test, okay? Specifically, just be able to recognize it and know what pronation eversion is, which is just the foot collapsing inward. And Yes, well, ankle pronation and ankle supination are is both of them that we're going over. But pronation is one we went over first. What happens at the foot? You have eversion. What happens at the knee? You have internal rotation. The femoral movement is also internally rotated, and this is looked at from an anterior view or from the front. Supination is the pretty much the exact opposite. You have inversion of the foot. You have external rotation of the knee or tibia, and the femoral movement is also external rotation, and that would be viewed from the front as well. So you can imagine the opposite of this, in which the feet really open outwards, and the knees kind of point outwards in the opposite direction, and everything's externally rotated and open, to where this looks more closed, we'll say. All right, so that's slide 8. Let's move to slide 9 and talk about our deviation number 2. This is hip adduction or hip hiking. Okay, this is kind of hard for you as a personal trainer to really gauge, but just pretty much assume that every person has a small hip hike to one side, which can cause issues in the low back specifically. You wouldn't really be dealing with this too much as far as trying to correct this. I would more put this in the hands of a chiropractor, physical therapist sort of element. You can follow guidelines based on what they recommend, but that's why we don't have any specifics around fixing, we'll say, a hip hike. You want hips to be neutral or equal, even on both sides, parallel to the ground. But as you can see in the right side picture, that hip is definitely dropped on the left and raised on the right, or hiked on the right. All right, over to slide 10. We now have postural deviations, which we were going over the whole time. But the deviation number 3, we're talking about pelvic tilting. The most common pelvic tilt is the anterior pelvic tilt. Okay, this is very common because we sit down all day, and it shortens our hip flexors and weakens our glutes. When we have short hip flexors and weak glutes, our pelvis tends to anteriorly rotate. So what does this mean, the anterior pelvic tilt? It says superior anterior portion of the ascis rotates downward and forward. Okay, that is basically, you can see in the left side how there's this anterior wheel spinning going from top of the hip forward and kind of causing this excessive arch in the low back. This is definitely associated with tight hip flexors. Know that for the test. Anterior pelvic tilt, tight hip flexors, and a tight erector spinae. Absolutely, always, 100% of the time, if that's what's going on, you have tight hip flexors. Stretch the hip flexors, stretch the quads, take a softball to the abdomen where the deeper hip flexors are, or this iliopsoas. That's really a really, really good one that I've found to fix that. And actually really significantly relieves low back pain in those sort of people that have low back pain associated with the anterior pelvic tilt. Then we also have our it's due to sedentary lifestyles and lots of time spent sitting. I sit down all day. I have to fight this constantly as well, tight hip flexors. So, getting up every 30 minutes to an hour and just moving around, walking around, stretch my hip flexors definitely helps prevent that. But my back starts to get pretty tight when I sit down for too long. And then that's when it reminds me, hey, you got to get up and stretch your hip flexors, because it's basically the position is not healthy for the low back sitting. The posterior pelvic tilt is a lot less common, but what is it? The superior portion of the pelvis or ascis rotates downward and backward. Okay, that's basically the butt is tucked. This is your flat back posture. In which the pelvis kind of is tucked underneath you and almost like you're rounding the low back. Okay, and is associated with tight or overactive rectus abdominis and tight hamstrings because they pull in the opposite direction of the anterior pelvic tilt. So when you think about the antagonistic relationship for an anterior pelvic tilt and a posterior pelvic tilt, whatever's tight in the anterior pelvic tilt, you would want to stretch. And whatever's tight in the posterior, and then those same muscles that are tight in the anterior pelvic tilt would need to be strengthened in the posterior pelvic tilt, if that made sense. So basically, in the anterior pelvic tilt, you have tight hip flexors and tight erector spinae. You need to foam roll and stretch those. In the anterior pelvic tilt, you have a weak hamstrings and gluteus maximus, as well as rectus abdominis. And those need to be strengthened. For the posterior pelvic tilt, you just flip-flop those, and the ones that need to be strengthened need to be lengthened, and the ones that need to be lengthened need to be strengthened. That was probably a little bit confusing there, but hopefully you followed me a bit, and it's an antagonistic relationship because the muscles that perform an anterior pelvic tilt are weak when you have the posterior pelvic tilt. And I'm not going to try anymore. Anyways, moving to slide number 11 and continuing with deviation number 4. Shoulder position, specifically related to the thoracic spine, and really the rounding of the shoulders and the forwardness of the head. The head moves forward, the upper back rounds. This is your kyphosis posture, or excessive kyphosis, upper back kyphosis posture. And you need to be able to recognize what compensations are in what plane of motion. So if the head drifts forward, like the photo on the right, that is a sagittal plane deviation because the head is moving forward in line with the sagittal plane. Okay. And if you round the flexion of the upper back, that is also a sagittal plane movement too, which we kind of talked about in the previous chapter. All right. So also you need to know a shoulders not being level is a frontal plane deviation. Why is it frontal plane? Because you're looking at them from an anterior view and that one of their shoulders is going up to a lateral side. And that is a frontal plane deviation. I want you to know that. And upper trapezius, levator scapulae, and rhomboids need to be strengthened. The rhomboids need to be strengthened in order to... All of those three are considered tight on one of the sides of the shoulder being not level. The more raised shoulder, those muscles are tight and need to be lengthened. There you go. Upper trapezius, levator scapulae, rhomboids of the tighter elevated shoulder need to be lengthened or foam rolled and stretched. Asymmetry to the midline. That is a lateral trunk flexion. That is a frontal plane deviation, or it's basically like kind of leaning over to the side slightly. These are all shoulder deviations. Protracted forward rounded shoulders. That's what you're seeing in the photo over here. The shoulders are rounded, the head is forward, and the main muscle that you need to know that is tight is going to be pectoralis major. Okay. And then the main muscle that is weak for protracted shoulders, rounded shoulders, is weak rhomboids, okay? Highlight that, know that for that movement compensation or that postural deviation. And also, if someone does have rounded shoulders, typically their palms face backward when that shoulder is kind of rounded forward. And that's what we're talking about when palms face backwards during scapular protraction. Scapular protraction is what you're seeing in the picture, in which that guy's shoulders are drifting forward. All right, so also you have medially rotated humerus. This is also kind of rounded shoulder posture, internally rotated shoulders. And that pec major, latissimus dorsi, and subscapularis are all internal rotators that need to be lengthened and or stretched. And then you also have kyphosis and a depressed chest. Kyphosis is more rounding, more or less, and that's your shoulder adductors. Latissimus dorsi is the main shoulder adductor. Pec minor, rectus abdominis, internal oblique, in which you're kind of hunched over and kind of pulled to the ground from the front. I would even throw pec major in there too, for sure. All right, moving over to slide 12, continuing with our deviation number 5. All right, this is the forward head position. This guy's ears are not in line with his shoulder. If you take your browser or clicker and draw a straight line in a vertical position in the middle of his shoulder, you get the back of his head and you don't get the ear. The ear you want in line with the shoulder to be a proper posture from that lateral view. This is called a forward head position. Once again, it is the sagittal view. And the head is moving forward in the sagittal plane. It is a sagittal plane deviation. Okay, we want you to know that for sure. All right, moving to slide number 13. We're going to get into basically the 5 primary movements. We're going to list them, but we already listed them in the previous chapter. But then we're going to understand the compensations associated with one of them, specifically the bend and lift. This is also known as the overhead squat assessment by other certifying bodies, or just a squat assessment, or whenever a personal trainer says, let me see your squat so I can determine what's tight and what's weak in your body, that's what they're referring to. Okay, but what are the five primary movements? You have your bending and lifting, bending, raising, and lifting, lowering movements, so bend and lift. You have your single leg movements, such as a lunge or walking. You have your pushing horizontally and vertically. You have your pulling horizontally and vertically. And you have your rotational movements. Hooray. All right, those are the five primary movements. I want you to have those memorized for sure. And then bend and lift compensations. Basically, you're looking at the bend and lift. It's called the bend and lift screen. I typically refer to it as the overhead squat assessment. They don't use that term in this text, but you may hear that out in the field, so I just want you to be aware. The anterior view, what are you looking for? If the knees move inward from the anterior view, you have overactive tight hip adductors, the inner thigh muscles, and a tight TFL. TFL stands for tensor fascia lata. It is my favorite type of lata. Latte? No? Not too funny. But TFL is basically another hip flexor, just lateral to the hip bone or pointiest part of the hip bone. And those are tight and need to be stretched. So stretch your hip flexors and stretch your hip adductors, your inner thighs, if the knee moves inward. Underactive, lengthened muscles are gluteus medius and gluteus maximus. What do you do with underactive muscles? You strengthen them, okay? So that's where you work on isolated exercise to strengthen the gluteus medius and maximus. That would be something like to strengthen the gluteus maximus, you can do, donkey kicks, a fire hydrants are some of my favorites, glute extensions, like with a barbell, putting it on your waist and tucking the glutes with your back or in a glute bridge position on a bench, something like that. You'll see those out there with people looking to get nice butts. They do a lot of gluteus maximus strengthening, right? And then sagittal view, okay, we're looking at if the movement is initiated at the knees in the sagittal view, let's say they go into a squat and the first thing they do is bend their knees, that means that they typically have quad and hip flexor dominance and tightness, and that's basically insufficient activation of the glutes group. Whenever somebody moves at the knees first, you want to teach them how to do the hip hinge exercise, which is bend over at the hip by kind of sticking the butt out. Okay, the first the initiation of the squat begins at the hip, meaning the butt starts to protrude backwards and the hip starts to bend before the knees start to bend. That kind of almost like you're sitting down, you're moving backwards. Okay, so strengthen the glutes, teach them the hip hinge exercise, also stretch hip flexors and quadriceps for sure with the if the movement is initiated at the knees. Sagittal view, okay, what is looked at in the sagittal view besides the above? You have a back excessively arching, aka lordosis, aka anterior pelvic tilt. That is the top left picture in this slide. You can see an excessive arch in that female's lower back. That means the pelvis is anteriorly rotated. Okay. So what is tight? We kind of already went over this in the above when we went over the anterior pelvic tilt, but type hip flexors, back extensors, including the erector spinae and latissimus dorsi. Okay. What is weak? You have your rectus abdominis, the deeper core muscles, gluteus medius, gluteus maximus, and the hamstrings. So what do you do with tight muscles? You foam roll and stretch them. What do you do with weak muscles? You strengthen them. Isolated strengthening is what it's called. Sagittal view, next one, excessive forward lean. This is what you're seeing in the bottom right photo, in which the lines in that excessive forward lean are not parallel. You always want the line of the upper body in line with the shins, okay? And as you can see, the lines are crossing pretty quickly there. That is an excessive forward lean, and that is unable to achieve parallel, okay? That's the way that ACE will refer to that. So if you ever see that on the test in a picture if they ever say it, it'll be referred to as unable to achieve parallel. That means the shins and the upper body are not in line, not in a perfect line. This indicates hip flexor tightness and calf tightness, or gastrocnemius and soleus tightness. Definitely want to foam roll and stretch those muscles. And then also insufficient activation of the glutes. If the glutes are not strong enough, they will not be able to hold that person in an upright position. So strengthen the glutes, which you can find many, many ways to do so if you type in butt workout on Google. Yeah, be careful with that one. Anyways, sagittal view, also the back rounds forward. Okay, so the middle of the back starts to round, or the arms even kind of fall forward. That is going to be latissimus dorsi tightness, teres major tightness, pec major and pec minor tightness. So the whole front of the upper body is overactive or tight, and that needs to be stretched and foam rolled. And the underactive muscles would be the external rotators of the shoulder, like the infraspinatus teres minor, as well as the posterior deltoid, rhomboids, lower middle traps for the upper back, retractors and extensors, more or less. All right, perfect. So let's move on to slide number 14 and the movement screening continued. Hurdle step compensations. We do want you to know that aside from the bend and lift screen, the hurdle step compensations are very similar and have the same muscles that are tight. Okay, so if the knee moves inward in the hurdle step, just like when the knee moves inward in the bend and lift screen, you have a tight overactive adductors and TFL. Specifically, we want you to know that if the knee moves inward in the hip or the hurdle step screen, the adductors are overactive. That's something that may show up in a test question. Underactive gluteus medius and maximus. So once again, if the hip flexors are ever tight, typically that means the gluteus medius or the glute muscle group is weak. So it's pretty good almost every single time to turn on your glutes before any workout, especially if it's a lower body workout, and stretch your hip flexors. Just keep that in mind, especially if you're noticing any pain or plateau with strength. Make sure you're in proper positioning and form. And then from the anterior view in the hurdle step compensations, look out for the hiking of the raised hip. The leg might be raised or the foot might be kind of pointing inward or outward, that sort of thing. That means you have tight stance leg hip flexors, which is going to limit the posterior hip rotation during that raise. Really nothing that you'll see too often and really pinpoint. I'd rather you look for the knee moving inward in that screen, but yeah. All right, and then you have your shoulder push stabilizations. And the sagittal view, specifically you're looking for something called winging of the scapula. And this is during the push-up movement, the parascapular muscles are unable to stabilize the scapula against the rib cage, and the shoulder blades pop off, or not pop, but they lift off the rib cage. And I'm sure you remember a friend in elementary school that could put their arm behind their back and lift their shoulder blade off their rib cage pretty far. I don't know why I have vivid memories of many kids being able to do that, but that's basically what scapular winging is. That's not a good thing for posture because it indicates instability of and lack of strength in the serratus anterior, trapezius, and rhomboids for sure. So keep that in mind if you see someone doing a push-up and their scapula lifts off the ribcage. And also can be due to a flat thoracic spine, but yeah, more often it's just more scapular winging because of the weaker muscles that stabilize the shoulder blade. All right, moving on and continuing with movement screens as we move to slide 15, you have thoracic spine mobility compensations. And specifically, we're looking at the transverse view with bilateral discrepancy, assuming no previous issues. Basically, if you see the thoracic spine, we'll say moving in a slight rotation, and basically not being perfectly straight ahead, kind of slightly rotated off. That means typically side dominance, meaning right leg or right arm or left leg or left arm might be more dominant, causing overactive muscles in one of those groups. Or possible differences in paraspinal length, meaning your erector spinae or the muscles that run along your spine, one side might be tighter. The torso rotation is what you're mainly looking for with the thoracic spine. And then that might be associated with some hip rotation as well. So that's from the transverse view. That's from the overhead view. I honestly, I've never used this one. I don't think I've ever needed to use this one, but you can read more about it in the book. And yeah, if you, if people do have back pain, this can be potentially used to determine if they might need to focus on stretching one side more than the other. All right, and then assessing flexibility, kind of every movement screen that you do assesses flexibility, in my opinion, but these are directly related to length of specific muscles. And starting with the Thomas test, that is hip flexion and quadriceps length. They're basically, you're going to test someone's hip flexor length by lying on their back and moving their hip flexor through a specific range of motion. Or they are going to lie on their back and lift their hip flexor based on a certain, or, and then look for certain compensations. I can see quadriceps and hip flexor length very easily through the overhead squat, so I don't typically use the Thomas test. Okay, and that's when the you have excessive forward lean or arch anterior pelvic tilt. Those are hip flexor issues. But one we do want you to know for the test in the field is the passive straight leg raise. So the passive straight leg raise is you lifting someone's leg while they're laying on their back to test the flexibility of the hamstrings. Okay, what does the passive straight leg raise test? It tests the length of the hamstrings. Write that down for sure. What is the length that needs to be achieved for the passive straight leg raise? 80 degrees of or more of hip flexion. Okay, know that number. 80 degrees of flexion needs to be achieved for the passive straight leg raise. And this is before the pelvis rotates posteriorly. And that means normal length, and any less, like 75 degrees, means that there is tightness in the hamstrings. All right, moving to shoulder mobility. That is going to basically be referred to flexion and extension. Hips and shoulders are able to move in all planes. We want you to know that basically the hips and the shoulders are the most mobile joints in the body. They move in all planes of motion, transverse, sagittal, and frontal. So keep that in mind just in case that was to be a test question on, you know, which two joints might be the most mobile and move in all planes of motion. Okay. Flexion and extension. So ability to flex the shoulder 170 to 180 degrees is good mobility. I would say even flex it even more than that would be good mobility, 180 or more. We really want the shoulder to be able to, or the hands to almost go behind the head in the overhead position to really have good mobility. And then you have internal and external rotation test. Basically, can they externally rotate or internally rotate enough? One thing that you do want to note is that if you do not pass the external rotation test, meaning you can't externally rotate enough, what muscles are tight? Pectoralis major, latissimus dorsi, and subscapularis. Okay, those are all internal rotators that are considered tight if you can't perform adequate external rotation. The reason why we note that one is that that's so common in the industry and with all people, because we sit down all day long, we do everything in front of us, that really brings a more rounded shoulder appearance, and it is tough to pass the external rotation test with a rounded shoulder appearance. Also, males that work out chest too much, not going to be able to pass that test. Why? Because their pecs, lats, and subscapularis are too tight. Winky smiley. All right, Apley scratch test. For shoulder mobility, basically how far can they reach behind their head and onto their spine to touch specific landmarks? And if they can reach adequately far on both sides, they have good shoulder mobility. And that one's always tough because usually their stronger side might be also be more mobile to where their weaker side might not be, or their, we'll say their dominant side versus their non-dominant side. There's typically a disparity between discrepancy between the two. All right, and moving on to our last slide, assessing balance and core strength and also endurance. Balance and core strength are we're really focusing on understanding, let's say somebody comes to you and they're a pretty good athlete and they want to go more towards that load training phase pretty quickly. You would want to probably assess their balance and core strength just to make sure that they're ready for higher levels of training. So how can you do that? You can do that through the sharpened Romberg test. This is just a basic assessment of static balance. And then you reduce the base of support. And then also you can make it more challenging by closing your eyes or different elements of that. You can read a little bit more into that there. But yeah, see how long they can stand on one foot. See if they can reach in different directions. See how well balanced they are. And also the Stork standing balance test, or stork stand. That's where you angle your non-planted knee at 90 degrees and stand on that, kind of like a in a yogi position looking, or a meditative sort of position might help. That is a static balance as well on a single leg. And then you also have McGill's torso muscular endurance test, which tests the trunk flexor endurance, trunk lateral flexor or lateral flexor endurance, and then also trunk extensor endurance, which there's different positionings for those. But yeah, those can test specifically if you see somebody that has a certain posture imbalance and you want to test the extensors or flexors of the trunk. You can directly target those using the McGill's torso muscular endurance test. All right, guys, we made it through that one. We got a nice long audiobook lecture for you set up next. We get into a little bit more detail there, so definitely go through that. And yeah, go and complete that. Once you complete that, the assignment. After the assignment, complete the assignment audio explanation. Make sure you got the right answers. And then go to take the quiz to make sure you retain the right information to crush this chapter on questions that come up for questions that come up from this chapter on the test. So yeah, about probably the most dense as far as test questions go, this chapter for the entire test. I'd say almost up to 20 total test questions come from this area, because they really want you to understand how to assess people, because that allows you to create better fitness programs. So they're going to test you significantly on this chapter. Keep that in mind, study this up, and yeah, go ahead and complete all the tasks below. I'll see you down at the audio lectures. Cheers.